Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Signs from the Other Side, the place to share stories of signs, coincidences, and messages from the other side. I'm your host, Fern Ronay, and I am joined today by blogger, writer, wife, mom, Chicago gal, and so much more, Sheila Quirk. Hi, Sheila. Sheila, can you hear me?
I can, yes.
Hi. We had a few seconds of technical difficulties there, but I'm so happy to hear your voice. Thank you for doing this.
Oh, absolutely. Fern, I was looking forward to speaking with you today.
Me too. Sheila Quirk has been blogging since 2011 as Mary Tyler Mom, where she writes about parenting, childhood cancer, adoption, life in Chicago, and as it states on her website, MaryTylerMomWrites.com, parenting and surviving in these challenging times. She is also a freelance writer, wife, mom, and trained clinical social worker. Her writing has been featured in the Chicago Tribune and on Scary Mommy, among others. You can read all her posts on her website. Again, it's MaryTylerMomWrites.com, including her series, Donna's Cancer Story, which documents her daughter Donna's 31 months of treatment. Thank you again, Sheila. In case I forget say it later, thank you 1,000 times. So we know each other through blogging. Oh, go ahead. I warned you there was a delay.
Yes. I always say that the way that I get to parent Donna, my daughter now, is by speaking about her. That is the only opportunity I have. So whenever I'm given a chance, I jump on it because, you know, it's a way to be connected and remember and honor her too.
That's perfect. And I interviewed John Edward, the psychic medium. He did Crossing Over.
Yeah.
The only psychic I trust. And I interviewed him, and I asked him, you know, what advice do you give to someone who just is trying to get through the rest of their life without their loved one? And he said to honor them. That those are his exact words: honor them and honor, remember them, and speak about them. So that's perfect, and I'm glad you're doing it. And everything.
I'm
going to
start this interview with tears in my eyes already.
Oh.
So let's do it.
Well, I've been crying doing my Sheila research. So. But that's okay. It's okay.
Yeah.
No, we can cry.
That's
what we're here for. It's healing.
Yeah.
So Mary Tyler Mom is not just a great name for a blog. You're going to make it after all, but it's so well written. I feel like everything you've written, like you could write about flipping through the phone book and it would be mesmerizing. It's true. But I love that the first 6 months of blogging, you kept things very light and funny. There were a lot of, you know, jokes made at Gwyneth Paltrow's expense, which you later apologized for and stopped doing. But it was this effort to be relatable, which I find very relatable.
Oh, you know, that was very intentional on my part. And the reason that I started Mary Tyler Mom is that I really believed, I should preface this by saying I never wrote before. I wasn't a writer. I didn't work around words. I was a clinical social worker. And
you didn't major in English? Because I feel like you have such... It's so professional and it's so perfect. There's never even a mistake, but it's also like so lyrical.
Yes, no. I was an American Lit minor, but that was it. And, you know, I took a different path, and I worked as a clinician and a social worker with older adults. And the reason that I started writing was when our daughter was diagnosed with cancer, about 2 days later, my husband came up with the idea to start an online journal so that we can communicate with friends and family. And that became sort of our lifeline for the 2.5 years that Donna was in treatment. And then after she died, it was a caring bridge.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it was a caring bridge journal. And after she died, my husband stopped writing. You know, he was using it as a communication tool, and it became clearer to me that I was using it as a way to connect and express myself, everything that was going mm-hmm. on inside my head, you know, during these difficult experiences I was living, and I wasn't ready to stop writing. But I also didn't want to just keep writing about grief. So I made this very mm-hmm. conscious decision to blog, and I was not ever going to reveal that I was a grieving mother. I was just going mm-hmm. to, you know, kind of be funny and jokey, and mom blogs were all the rage in 2011, and it was going to be kind of just about parenting and working, and that was it. And mm-hmm. then it became pretty clear pretty quickly that it wasn't authentically me, and that I couldn't hide the fact that grief is just so much a part of my parenting, and it's so much a part of my day-to-day life. So finally, it kind of, I say that I came out of the grief closet yes. and yes. just kind of made a pronouncement on the blog that, yes. oh, yes, and also this is an important part of who I am. I'm the mm-hmm. mother of a daughter who died of cancer.
And you shared Donna's cancer story that year in September 2011. So yes. you started blogging in 2011, right? In the beginning.
I started blogging, yes, in, mm-hmm. I believe it was April of 2011.
And then, so it was like 6 months of staying in the grief closet. And then in September
yeah.
2011, you brought everyone at, certainly in Chicago now, and I know all over, to their knees with the 31 months of Donna's treatment documented for the Childhood Cancer Awareness Month of September 2011, and it was serialized in on Chicago Now and then also on Huffington Post, and it's extraordinary, yeah. and I'm going to share it again, and everyone who's listening should please go read it, because it's just incredible. But and that was quite the way to reveal yourself. It was just incredible. And I love that Donna, to tell her story, she was born in 2005. She is named after your mom, which is
yeah.
so sweet. And your mom actually passed while you were pregnant with her.
Right. So Donna,
which is
was
a whole other complicated.
Yeah. it yeah. was. Donna was our first child. And, you know, just how can I say this? I was 35 years old and I was very happy to not have children. I had a great life. I had a great career. I had really zero maternal instincts. And I thought, well, maybe someday. But, you know, when you're 35 and you're still saying, maybe someday. You know,
oh, I've been
it
exactly
might not
there.
Happen. I had a lovely, full life outside of motherhood. And then my mom was diagnosed with a brain tumor, and she became incapacitated. The reason that we learned she had a brain tumor was she had a brain bleed that resulted in right-sided paralysis, and for the first couple of days, they assumed and believed it was a stroke, and then mm-hmm. we learned quickly that it was not a stroke, it was a brain tumor, and it was aggressive, and that she would die as a result of her brain tumor, mm-hmm. and I became a caregiver quickly, like, you know, sort of mm-hmm. overnight. I wanted to help my dad and help my mom, and so I, you know, just the day-to-day after I finished my professional job, I would drive into Chicago and see my folks and, you know, do laundry and cook and bathe my mom and get my mom ready for bed and all of those things. And it struck mm-hmm. me that, oh, I could do this. And mm-hmm. I actually, you know, feel very present doing this. Maybe I could be a mother. Maybe I have a part of me that I didn't realize was there. And shortly later became pregnant. So I credit my mom, Donna, with mm-hmm. sort of, you know, giving me her last lesson that I was, you know, I had different facets that I hadn't explored. Yeah, that I could do this.
Mm-hmm.
And Donna was born just a few months after my mom died and was named for my mom.
Were you planning on naming her?
My husband and I talked. We didn't find out what if our child would be a boy or a girl. And so it was a surprise. But we knew that if we had a daughter, that she would be named Donna. So the day that Donna was born, you know, she was birthed, and I said, okay, is somebody going to tell me? And, you know, it was my husband who said, it's a girl. And I said, Donna. That was, you know, the first thing I said to her was her name, Donna. Yeah.
Oh, I love it. And she celebrated her first birthday, and then it was shortly after that
she got the diagnosis. At 20 months old. So just before her second birthday.
Right. And then, so she went through 31 months of treatment, which you described wonderfully. And writing that, you went back to your old diaries and read that month. That had to be so hard, but so I know you described it in a post actually, which is so beautifully written, but so hard, but so necessary.
Both of those things, you are nailing it. It was very hard, but I found it very healing and necessary for my grief and acceptance and my capacity to move forward and make room for the grief in my life, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And one of the other things that you did after she passed, that what would have been her birthday, you kind of had a celebration, which I completely get, and I've seen it in my own family. You kind of don't know what to do on these days, and you want to remember, and I like that you called the anniversary the remembery. And so you had a kind of a birthday party with young people, some of her friends, and if you want to tell the story of the two envelopes that you received that day.
It is really hard to, how can I say, it's so hard to know how you acknowledge the birthday of a child who's no longer with you. And it was her first birthday without Donna actually being here. And we sort of went back and forth, what do we do? How should we do this? And we decided on this pizza party at a favorite restaurant of Donna's. And it is a place that we had celebrations with her and with our friends and family for her. So it felt familiar and it felt like, okay, this makes sense. But the day of, Fern, oh goodness, the day of, I just thought, what?
Right.
We can't have a birthday party. What are we doing? Mm-hmm. What are we thinking? I just really didn't want to be there. But the place was expecting us. Our friends were going to be there. You don't really know how you're going to feel, I think, until you're in that moment. And I think the part of me that's a pleaser just didn't want to disappoint people. And so it was, okay, I'll just show up. And we'll make it through, and we're going to get out of there as quickly as we can. And we showed up, and, you know, it was awkward, and people were so lovely to be there and well-meaning, but is it a celebration? I couldn't figure out what it was. A couple of folks handed us envelopes, and a couple of folks, you know, gave us little gift bags. And I just sort of shoved all of that in a corner. And then at the end of the night, you know, everybody left. We said our goodbyes. We went home. We put our other baby to bed. And it was about 10 o'clock. And I saw, oh, gosh, there's the envelopes and little gift bags. Okay, let's do this. And I opened them up, and two of them had acorns in them, like real live acorns that you'd pick up from the ground. Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, that's strange. That's strange. And they both had notes attached to them. And they were both from our daughter's playmates. So she was one of sort of three girls. All of the parents were friendly with one another, and we all had children within, I think it was 6 months, they had all been born. Donna was the oldest. So these little girls were both 4 years old. And the notes that their moms attached to these acorns in the envelopes were both very expressive. So one of them said, you know, we went on a walk and we found these acorns, and Lily was one of the little girls. Lily wanted you to have them. And I thought, well, that's so sweet. That's very nice that this little girl was thinking of me. And then I went and I opened up the other envelope and more acorns. And inside was a note from the mom of the little girl. And the mom's note was very detailed. And she said, you know, oh, and I'm so, it was sort of like almost an afterthought these acorns were added. And she said, I've been meaning to give you these for a while. We found them on a walk. My daughter and I found them on a walk. And she kept wanting me to give them to you. And I kept telling my daughter that, well, Sheila doesn't need acorns to remember Donna. Sheila knows Donna and has memories and, you know, photos and lots of things. We will tell Sheila about these acorns. And apparently her daughter got really angry at her that she never, mom never gave me the acorns. So she demanded at Donna's birthday party, you better bring those acorns. You better bring those acorns. They are for Sheila. She needs
that
to have them. And
funny.
Right? So mom
and these two little girls weren't together when they came up with it. Like they separately decided to give you acorns.
Exactly. Totally, completely. And the other, you know, they didn't know that the other had given me these acorns. So as I'm reading these two notes and I'm putting two and two together, you know, the first thing that came to my mind is, well, there's got to be a common denominator here about acorns. Like, what do acorns symbolize? So like any civilized, you know, human, I went to Google.
Of course.
And I just typed in the symbolism of acorns. What do acorns symbolize? And so I'm reading this. At this point, it's like 10:30 on the first night, you know, Donna's first birthday without being together. And it feels like a visceral, how can I explain this? Like a visceral punch to the gut. In those moments where I'm alone in the bedroom with these acorns and my Google definition of what they symbolize, which is protection and potential and sort of being okay, maturity. It was like this visceral punch that Donna was reaching out from somewhere to tell me that she was protected, that she was okay, all was going to be well. You know, that we were going to be okay, that she was okay. And it felt so certain, and it felt so real. And, mm-hmm. you know, my husband and I don't practice a faith. I am agnostic. He is an atheist. Mm-hmm. When I put two and two together, I sort of ran out and kind of showed him the acorns and the notes and my 100% certainty that Donna had communicated to us on her birthday. And he's mm-hmm. just sort of, you know, humored me like, oh, yes, absolutely. And, you know, Fern, I mm-hmm. still to this day, you know, I don't think he sees what I see in it. And I don't think
right.
he feels or has felt what I felt mm-hmm. in that moment.
Right. And I,
but
yeah.
ever since then, acorns have been so significant. They are comforting in a way that I can't describe. And they pop
I
into
completely
my life.
Get it.
Still.
Mm-hmm. At the perfect time when you need that
they
comfort.
Do.
Because the,
yeah.
the other time, so you have two beautiful sons, I know from being friends with you on Facebook, and you adopted your youngest son, and there was the way you also people should also read your blog about going through the process of adoption, and it's so it sounds so wonderful, but also you know you're kind of on the edge of your seat up until the day
right.
you take the baby home in your arms, and there was the day that he was born, and you were waiting for, you know, the time in between he was born and when she was signing the papers was such
right.
a nerve-wracking day. And
yes.
the acorns came in Texas.
They came
via
again.
Phone.
Yes.
Yes.
We were, our youngest son had been born, and he was born in the state of Texas. And the way that the Texas adoption laws work is that when a mother chooses to place her child for adoption, that becomes formalized in 48 hours. So 48 hours after his birth is the same day that his birth mother is discharged from the hospital. And the plan was that we would meet at the adoption agency, and that if all the papers were signed and in order, then our son,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to say because I want to honor his birth mother
mm-hmm.
because our son also has another mother. You know, so basically her son becomes our son, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But a lot is resting in those moments. And it was clear that when our son's birth mom went to the adoption agency, that she would have a little bit of time to sit and think and contemplate and, you know, talk to a counselor to determine if this was truly what she wanted and what she felt was best for her
mm-hmm.
child. And we were dispatched to go to the pharmacy. the birth mother didn't have any family in town in Fort Worth where a child was born. And so we said, well, we're happy to do that. We'll just go pick up the medication that had been called in. Someone just needed to pick it up. And so I'm sitting at the pharmacy waiting. I'm already a wreck and highly emotional because
mm-hmm.
I don't know what will happen. I don't know
right.
how the day will pan out. And the weight of what our son's birth mother was tasked with in those moments was
mm-hmm.
just kind of having buried a child, having lost a child,
mm-hmm.
the thought of, you know, placing your child in the arms of another family was so profound that
mm-hmm.
it was just, I was a wreck. I was a wreck. I just couldn't imagine
I
what
can imagine.
She was going through or anything. And all of a sudden, sitting at the pharmacy, my phone started blowing up. And I kid you not, mm-hmm. there were a series of friends in that moment that were sending anecdotes or photographs of acorns that they had found. And the thing that was that we really need to talk about in terms of coincidence mm-hmm. and signs
right.
is that we said nothing to anybody mm-hmm. about where we
I just
were.
Got chills. Mm-hmm. None of those oh. friends had any idea that this day was
no.
even
no.
what was going on whatsoever.
No.
Unbelievable.
And we
Unbelievable.
Were instructed to do that, you know, to keep it on the down low, mm-hmm. that you don't know how it's
right.
going to work out, that you don't know how you'll feel if you announce this beautiful thing. And then,
right.
you know, the child's birth mother makes a different decision. You just don't know. You can't
right.
count on anything.
That makes,
my father
that makes
knew,
sense.
And that
mm-hmm.
was my husband's mm-hmm. parents knew, and one of my sisters knew, and that was about it. So I'm
but not
there
one person who sent you an acorn antidote
no.
or picture or anything.
Oh,
amazing.
And again, like different people from different parts of
right,
our life,
your life
and our friend groups. And those
wow.
acorns in those moments, you know, I got the first one and I said, oh, an acorn, that's great. And then by the time the third one came in, I just thought, okay, like this is significant. Donna knows something that I don't yet know. And she's
yes,
telling
I
me it's going to be okay.
Can, yes. I always say they're kind of like have an invisibility or cloak or like a fly on the wall. They know things. And are able
yes.
to use their energy to let you know it's okay. It's
and they,
gonna be okay.
They use yes, and the people that we love who are no longer with us, they use the people that are close to us to communicate
mm-hmm. yes.
with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard that, and I'm telling you, I am really skeptical.
Yeah,
but
I know.
When you live
that's what makes
it
so great.
Yes, when you live
yeah.
through this and it just happens in these very heightened moments, I'm certainly not sitting in that pharmacy in 2013 looking for acorns. I'm really not.
Right.
I'm focused on what's happening in this particular moment, and the acorns mm-hmm. just sort of find me. And in my heart, I do believe
mm-hmm.
that was Donna reassuring me. She said
without a doubt
or saw that I was in a really challenging place, you know, emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just reaching out saying, you know, Mama, it's okay, Mama. It's okay.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So,
and one wasn't enough. It was like another one, just to confirm
right.
it. Another one. Another one.
Yeah. Are you
yeah.
listening,
oh.
Mom?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Right.
And another time, another nerve-wracking moment was with your son in the hospital, which this is just one of those other moments that it's just you can't write it better, you can't make it up. Just incredible with your son who was having a health issue, and you were sitting in the treatment room at the hospital. And look down.
And yep.
Another
one. That was
acorn.
My youngest guy too. And it's just that's what I mean, the randomness. A blue plastic acorn. So again, they come in all different shapes and sizes. But my youngest guy was being assessed in the hospital and going through a series of tests. And we were anxious about that, and we didn't know what the outcome would be, and we didn't know if the tests were positive, what would that mean for him and his quality of life moving forward. And so there was a lot of uncertainty and ambiguity, and, you know, we're in one of these assessment rooms, and some hospital clinicians are working with my son, and I'm sort of off to the side. He was three at the time. And I looked down, and there was, and again, no context. There was a blue plastic acorn. There's no rhyme or reason why a blue plastic Acorn would be there. It was a windowsill. It was a brand new hospital that had opened up. The Ability Lab in Chicago had opened up, you know, like 2 weeks prior. Like, what? Where is this coming from?
Right. It wasn't like they had just decorated for Thanksgiving or like, but even if it was, why would it be blue? Like, it was, there's no, like you said, no rhyme or reason, but there it was.
And totally random. And it was small, you know, it was under an inch in size. And oftentimes when I see an acorn, that's the first thing that pops into my head is acorns are everywhere. And in that moment, I have to sort of think about, okay, why is there an acorn here right now? And again, I'm not looking for an acorn in that moment. I'm sort of thinking about my son and his future and what's going to, you know, be in his future. What will his cards look like? And there was that acorn, and it was so reassuring. In the end, all was well. It's sort of like false alarm and no need to panic and, you know, everything resolved itself. And
right,
there's
like the
that
fly on the wall, she could see that it was going to be fine. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I love it.
Right.
That's incredible.
And I trust in those. I trust in those because even then, you know, when there's a little bit of uncertainty about what's going on and what's happening, that uncertainty sort of gnaws at you and weighs on you, and you sort of look for signs. Is something wrong? Do we have to get him back, you know, to be evaluated? Did they miss something? And then I think about that acorn, and it's sort of like, okay, Donna knows. I don't know,
exactly.
And I don't trust necessarily, but Donna knows, and she's telling me, so if I can trust in that, if I can trust in her love, and that's always easy for me to do. I'm never skeptical of her love. I'm never skeptical, you know, of what a beautiful child and what we shared between us. And so it's always very reassuring too.
And I love what you've done for St. Baldrick. So we read these stories, we read about Donna, and we feel we want to help. And I love that you've been so clear that the way to help is to donate money for research. Because when Donna was diagnosed, there was no treatment. There wasn't even a treatment protocol that you could follow because there hadn't been enough research done to know how to treat her particular type of cancer. So for 6 years, you've raised money for St. Baldrick's sponsoring shaving events. But this year, you went to D.C. with 46 other moms. How was that?
So we have been connected with St. Baldrick's, our family, since 2012, and we've hosted these shaving events. And they reached out to me last fall, and said that in April of 2018, they wanted to sort of evolve from purely fundraising to incorporate more advocacy. And might I be interested in going to Washington, D.C. to help advocate for better funding for childhood cancer? And I am a political geek of the highest order. These days especially, I sort of live and breathe politics. And as, you know, corrupt as I might believe politicians are and the system may be, I have a great regard for the concept of government and democracy and, you know, what occurs in our nation's capital. And so I was just elated at the prospect of telling Donna's story in that arena, and not trying to raise money from individuals willing to shave their heads, but trying to enlighten our elected officials to see the disparity of funding for childhood cancer, which is the number one disease killer of children. And it was a wonderful opportunity that I also got to bring my oldest son to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
And he sort of knocked the socks off of
aww.
Every staffer and politician that we met. And he spoke of his sister so eloquently. Their lives only overlapped for just under 10 months. So he was mm-hmm. Not quite 10 month old when his sister Donna died. But he spoke with such eloquency and intimacy of a brother missing his sister, who he has no mm-hmm. memories of.
Right.
And I think, much more than statistics or pleas of the adults, I think, seeing a 9-year-old kid be very frank about, missing and grieving a sister he never knew was mm-hmm. just very moving. And I'm really happy to report, too, that the legislation that we were there to advocate for passed, and it's one of the mm-hmm. very few bipartisan pieces of legislation
perfect.
That has been able to get through. Yes. And so now the question becomes, will they fund it? So we just keep
right.
our fingers crossed and we keep advocating
yes.
That
yes.
they fund the legislation that they pass. Yeah.
Speaking of money, you wrote about applying for Medicaid in the most incredible way. I'm going to share it too. It was before Obamacare, and you and your husband are highly educated. You had employer-provided health insurance. But at that time, there was a lifetime limit of $2 million. The doctors recommended a stem cell transplant that was $600,000 that was denied by your insurance company. And you describe they walked our upper middle class naive selves through the process at the hospital that Medicaid is not just for, you discussed the undeserving poor from the deserving poor, but it's that, I'm not doing it justice, and I will share the link. But it was incredible that you were able
yeah.
to describe how this can happen to someone who has an excellent job and excellent education, all of the benefits, and it can happen to, before Obamacare, it can happen to you, to anyone listening.
Oh, yeah. And just to add some context, too, the governor of Illinois in 2008, which is when Donna had her stem cell transplant, was Rod Blagojevich, who is currently mm-hmm. Sitting in a federal prison
mm-hmm.
for corruption.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing that he mandated while he was governor of Illinois is that every child, regardless of income, must be covered by insurance. It's just mandated. Mm-hmm. So we were quite lucky that when our insurer, which was Blue Cross Blue Shield, denied the mm-hmm. coverage for
mm-hmm.
the stem cell transplant as being an experimental treatment, because the state mandated that every child have insurance, Medicaid by law in the state of Illinois
mm-hmm.
had to provide coverage. And so Donna was sort of, with us guided through that process and was funded under Medicaid for
mm-hmm.
her stem cell treatment. And, we can debate, did it work? Did it not work?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's clear that it certainly lengthened her time with us. There's no question about that. It was not
right.
successful in eradicating her cancer cells, but I do believe, and the physicians that cared for her certainly believed, that it provided her more time with us.
Right.
But that's, to think about where we're at politically, this concept of pre-existing conditions. At that point, pre-existing conditions were not covered. I believe we're moving backwards right. in that direction that will so come scary. To that again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it's
and
a,
you said
it's
you,
a
the way you just said,
time.
Will it work? Oh, yeah, will it work? Will it not work? That's so easy to say, you know, when you're you're looking at the balance sheet. But if it's your kid, like if these lawmakers, if it was their kid, they did all the right things. They went to college. They got a great job. They have the, like, you can't blame someone. This is your child to the, you know, the people signing these laws. What if it was your baby?
Right.
What if it was the most important person in the world to you? That's what they have to think of. It's so...
Absolutely.
It becomes so about accounting, and it's so your heart is on the line.
Right, right. And
yeah.
and historically speaking, that's how we qualify and categorize the poor as deserving
mm-hmm.
versus undeserving.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, poor people in America are almost always treated as undeserving, that
mm-hmm.
something within their makeup brought them to that place. And
right.
it's simply not the case, especially
right.
in
right.
terms of medical catastrophes. It's just not an accurate sense. So there's a lot. Hopefully, you know, the pendulum will swing the other way soon, I hope.
Yeah.
But we
yeah.
have got to get away from this concept that if you live a good life, you will be a healthy individual. And if you
exactly.
have health issues, you've somehow contributed to that by your
right.
lifestyle choices. It's not,
nope, it can
you know,
happen
especially
to anyone.
Pediatric
yep.
cancer, they don't know what's causing it. It is the luck of the draw. It is a random occurrence. There's no deserving or undeserving. Everyone is
exactly.
deserving of medical care. And I hope our country can begin to embrace that as we move forward.
Yes. With your help, you're doing wonderful things. Thank you so much for doing this.
Oh, I so enjoyed speaking with you, Fern.
I
and
know.
I just want to thank you, too, in terms of the timing. This Friday, the October 19th, is the death anniversary for Donna. So that marks 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
She's been away from us. So it was very, you know.
Perfect timing.
Significant, yes.
Yeah.
significant.
Yeah.
To be able to speak with you on this particular day too. So I'm appreciative. Thank you so much for
Oh, thank
doing
you. And everyone can find you at of course.
You're such
of
a
course, and everyone,
like, champion.
Oh, and everyone can find you at MaryTylerMomWrites.com and on
That's
Facebook
good.
At MaryTylerMom and on Twitter at MaryTylerMom.
That's right.
Right.
Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Okay,
I'm so
great
proud
speaking
to know
with you.
You.
Oh,
wonderful
so
things
you
abound.
Too, Fern.
And
okay, you take care, my friend.
You
bye-bye.
Too. Thank you. Bye.
The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Oh, what a great audience. Let's dim the lights for this next one. Nope, too much. Ah, there it is. Got to get things just right. Like Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay, and we help you find coverage options that fit your budget. And now, the mood is right. Wait, the lights are back on again. Trudy, can you? And now it's completely dark.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law. The Starlight Lounge presents An Evening with the Progressive Box.
Oh, what a great audience. Let's dim the lights for this next one. Nope, too much. Ah, there it is. Got to get things just right. Like Progressive's Name Your Price tool. Tell us what you want to pay, and we help you find coverage options that fit your budget. And now, the mood is right. Wait, the lights are back on again. Trudy, can you? And now it's completely dark.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly, but then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.